Megan, thank you so much for being here today. I really appreciate it. And for purpose of introduction, Megan Carl was the head of Nike's basketball division for North America, a position no woman had ever held before. But during her time there, she experienced bullying so toxic that she made the agonizing decision to walk away. And I can't wait to hear more about that. But so much more has happened after that, which we'll get to as well. And that leads us to her meaningful, engaging, and important book in this arena, Walk Away to Win. Megan is now a consultant and teaching a leadership called Lead Always, Developing Better Leaders, which will decrease the number of bullies at the office, which will be great for all of us. Megan, thank you so much again for taking part in this conversation, navigating workplace bullying, finding resilience, and feeling joy, even in crisis. Thank you. So we've had a chance to talk a little bit before this formal interview, and I feel a connection with you for a number of different reasons. But maybe first and foremost is I was very much involved in sports in my early days, and you grew up in a sports family. So tell me a little bit about how growing up with a coach as a father in an athletic family, being an athlete yourself, has in a way formed your thoughts about workplace bullying and toxic workplace environments.
Yeah, it's interesting. I grew up in Spokane, Washington, so Eastern Washington, pretty idyllic upbringing. And it was my stepdad who came onto the scene when I was very, very little, maybe 3 years old. My mom married Dave Robertson, who was a high school basketball coach and a winning high school basketball coach at that. And Big Dave brought four boys into that union. And so right out of the gates, you know, I already had one older brother, but now we had the team. We had the five starters, and then I was first off the bench. So we had our own little basketball team, and our lives really revolved around sport and the idea of giving it your all. And you're competing and you're going for the win, but not in a, you know, sweep the knee way, in a, you know, very much high integrity, play the game, master the fundamentals, set the pick, you know, all the stuff. And so the foundation of that, I think, set me up really well to be successful at a place like Nike. Obviously, where every day you're talking about sport, you're interacting with consumers who love sport. But then more than that, I think it taught me so much about respect and giving your all, and just those fundamentals that I was brought up with.
And so in a similar fashion, and I grew up playing basketball as well, I think we both grew up with the idea that if you hustle, if you're a good team player, and this is the kind of thing you're talking about, and if you're productive, that the respect and success will come. And we're not going to spend the full half hour because you have so much great information to provide to bully victims, bully targets in this environment. And my career was in television. Yours was in Nike. In fact, I visited the Nike campus. We may have passed each other at some point. But how did you deal with the fact that you had this approach of being a great team player, of being productive, of caring about the team, if you will, and yet you were still bullied? And then we'll move on to the lessons learned from that horrible experience.
I think for me, it came down to values. And so I was brought up with such specific, intentional values of respect, high integrity, do your best work. Results matter, but it's not just about the results. It's how we get there. And so I think once those became misaligned with the place that I was spending all my time, that's a tough position to be in. And it's difficult because it doesn't feel good when your values are not aligned with your workplace anymore, when your workplace's values are no longer aligned with yours. So it doesn't feel good, but it's also a gift because it's so obvious. It's so obvious when that happens. And it doesn't mean that I flipped the switch right away and said, oh, I'm going to walk away to win. It was heartbreaking but it was so obvious. And so for me, once I understood that, and I remember I came home from a meeting and I said to my husband, I don't see myself there anymore. It was that obvious. Back to the sport, you know, analogy. Yep. Bullying is, and I remember when I was writing the book and I woke up and I thought, oh my God, I've got it. Bullying for me, it took me back to a specific high school game where I'm on defense and I can see the young woman coming and setting the pick on me. Yep. So the guard is gonna drive the bucket. And as we know, when somebody sets a pick, we see it, we maneuver and we get around it, or we ask for help. What happened on this particular play is I moved around it, and that offensive player shot her knee out into my unsuspecting, unprepared quad and right. dropped me to the ground. Yeah. I got back up. We had to call a timeout. They wrapped my leg. I got back in. But that, to me, it so beautifully illustrates workplace bullying. You see it. You instinctually know it's coming. You're not prepared for it to drop you. It does. You get back up. You go back in. And it happens again and again and again.
And so I think that's a great way to describe it. Even if you don't play basketball, you get it.
Yeah.
That's
it doesn't feel good.
And I had the same experience where I knew the bullying was coming and I just couldn't figure out a way to navigate around it. And so I want to ask you about that, but let me be a little bit more specific about this instance. How did the bullying manifest itself? Was it belittling? Was it demeaning talk? Were you kept away from key meetings? All of which happened to me in television over my 25-year career. But I want to hear from you how it manifests itself and what effect it had on you.
I love the resource of the Workplace Bullying Institute that Gary and Ruth Namey founded back in the mid-70s, I think 1974. But and the definition, I think, is so clear that bullying is a pattern of repeated health-harming mistreatment. And at work, that translates to so many different things. And therefore, sometimes it's hard to pinpoint because it's so many things. For me in the book, I tried to simplify it. Bullying is either covert or overt, and it either happens publicly or privately. And so if you think about those four quadrants, a public overt, a public covert, a private overt, a private covert, I experienced all of those things. So I experienced the in-your-face bully who's coming at you, yelling, banging the fist on the table, you know, do this over, you're no good. You know, that sort of coming at you. I experienced the public covert, which is more of the like, only you and I know that I'm trying to mess with you right now. But I am messing with you.
Wasn't there a story you had about you'd be giving a talk or leading a meeting and this bully would interrupt you in a bizarre way?
Yeah, there was a story in the book about the order of the slides, the order, you know, so you're up giving a keynote or PowerPoint presentation, and instead of being focused on the content,
yeah,
it's why is slide five now slide seven, and you know, put it back now. Uh-huh. Put it back now. Put it back right effing now.
Wow.
And when that's happening in a public setting like that, and you have just this like person coming at you, at least for me, I was so back on my heels. I wasn't the Megan Carl sitting here with you today saying, oh, that's bullying. I knew that was happening. I was more stunned. And my go-to was compliance.
Yeah.
So to go back to your original question, which was this, all the different kinds, the public, the private, which is really tough, where it's a private, but overt. So in public, they sing your praises. Oh my gosh, Andy is the best this we've ever had. And yeah. In private, hey, Andy, when I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. Shut the hell up.
Well, so horrifying. I gave a talk. I was at the Wall Street Journal for 6 years. And I had to give a big talk to about 50 executives I was global head of video, and my bully was sitting right next to me during my talk. And you know how unnerving that is? Just public speaking alone can be very difficult. And you know, you're so confident and self-assured, I can tell, in this environment. But what effect did that have on you in the workplace and also physically? I mean, I will tell you my experience, again, over decades in television, I had digestive problems. I couldn't sleep, terrible anxiety. And ultimately, I had suicide ideation. I've talked to people that actually were going to act on that or did by virtue of the kind of experience they had. I never did. I realized that. But I had all these things happen. How did it affect you in all the various ways, psychologically, emotionally, physically?
Yeah, well, I'm glad that you were able to find the help you needed to work through that. I experienced all of those things. I didn't understand that there was a connection between the mistreatment I was experiencing at work and my own physical and emotional and psychological deterioration. I didn't put those things together. And by the grace of God, I had an annual physical. And my doctor, my general practitioner at that time said, tell me what's going on with you. And I was in this safe place.
Yeah.
And I started to describe what was going on at work. And she said, you know, that's bullying. You know, you're going to need to make a change. And so for me, it was everything you described. I didn't sleep because I had hallucinations. I was incredibly paranoid. I was so outside of my body that, Andy, if I had passed you at Nike down the corridor, I actually wouldn't be sure if you saw me. I was so just, you know, outside my body. And so it affected everything.
I'm so sorry. Did it affect your self-esteem at work? Here you were, this big executive, successful, dynamic. Did you become somewhat different? Because I did. I was an executive producer. I was a global head of video. I was vice president of original programming. And yet I was walking, and I had my own staff, but it really just destroys your self-esteem.
Well, I did this because I just started to, I was always this, and then I became this. And in fact, after I left, I was invited to a coffee by a woman that I didn't know that well, but our paths had crossed at work. And she kind of out of the blue asked if I could get a coffee with her. And so we were sitting there. I'm already, you know, I've walked away. And she said, I'm so sorry. I knew something was happening to you.
Wow.
And I was so taken aback. And I said, oh, what do you mean? And, you know, because at work, you actually think you're doing a pretty good job of covering all this up and operating. And she said, you were always so open and big energy in a room. And I watched you become smaller and smaller. And wow. I knew something was happening to you. I didn't know what, but I wonder if I had said something to you, if it would have helped. And I looked at her. I was emotional. I said, the fact that you're saying something to me now helps tremendously. And that, you know, I interviewed 40, 50 people for my book, and we all have experienced the same thing of playing small, you know, turning into somebody that we're not. I feel like, I remember my husband asked me or was talking to me about that, my ending. And he said, you know, they didn't get you. They didn't get all of you. And that made me really sad because they didn't, because I didn't have all of me anymore. And that is so consistent across people who have experienced this.
Well, and they lost an amazing employee. We all know that. But so let me ask this about walk away to win, because again, it's this kind of sports metaphor. And when I was in the throes of my experience, I loved the work. I loved creating television shows, and I loved following the news and covering the news and being in the center of it. And so I didn't want to let the bully win. And I could only think of working harder, working better, trying to be more productive. And I thought if I just do that, the bully, the boss, usually they're the same person, would recognize and thank me and admire me and stop treating me this way. So my question for you is, and I think your book is so valuable and the information is so crucial because we all feel so alone. I didn't want to let the bully win. I needed the paycheck. So how can we walk away and still win and have our dignity, our integrity, and our self-esteem intact?
I think it's a big part of why I wanted to write the book, in that I wanted to provide language and tools to people who are experiencing or witnessing workplace bullying, so that, you know, walking away, that wasn't my first pull either.
Yeah.
I'd been at Nike for almost 30 years. There's clearly something that was holding me there, and it was the people. We had a tremendous time working on amazing projects, amazing work in amazing places. And so what we do as targets is we think it has something to do with us. And what you just described, you know, I did this and I did that. That's the sort of the rabbit hole that we go down, because it doesn't have anything to do with us. It's all about the bully. It doesn't matter if we put the slides in the other order, or we set it this way, or we, you know, went to the meeting, you know, earlier, or whatever it is. It's all about the bully. And what happens is, as targets, we spend so much time trying to navigate and spin move and cross over and shoot the gap and all the stuff. And meanwhile, the bully is just like, oh yeah, I got her on the ropes. I got him on the ropes. So I do not take it lightly, first of all, that I was able to walk away. But that was after years of mistreatment. And also, what I would say to people who are in this, document, find your allies, find ways to find your support system at work. Document, because walking away is not an option for everyone. I was in a position where I could. And I remember understanding that to stay was to continue to acquiesce to a system that was not built to support me. And that goes back to that value misalignment. And so to walk away was indeed the win. And that was a very tough switch in my brain, because walking away meant quitting, failing, losing.
Right.
And so therefore I became a quitter, a failure, a loser.
Right.
Nothing could be further from the truth.
And I'm sure your dad is a coach, and the coaches you had in my family, quitting, I wouldn't say it wasn't an option. It's just not something that we talked about, because when you committed to something, you stuck with it. We didn't even talk about, you know, I think I want to quit that club or quit that team. It was an unspoken kind of aspect to our upbringing, is you've got a commitment to the team, you've got a commitment to the class or whatever it is. And so that's why it was so hard for me. And it must have been terribly hard for you, because you do think, I'm a quitter, but I'm a loser. And I'm not putting that word in your, but it certainly was mine, because, and the bully, to use your sports analogy, was kind of changing the rules during the game.
Yeah.
Right? Because you think you know the rules, how to play. Again, play hard, play fair, play well, and contribute. And now all of a sudden, the bully not only is changing the rules, but kind of owns the game. So I certainly understand. I wish I would have been able to read your book when I was going through this. But having said that, I never figured out a strategy, which is why I got involved in this advocacy work, because I felt so alone. I had and still do, great kids, wonderful marriage, but I was so alone. And I just kept trying to figure out how to navigate through this. So if you do need the paycheck, which most of us do, if you do love or like the work, you like your colleagues and so forth, but there's this one person that's making you miserable, are there ways? In my view, there's no solution. You're not going to make that person your best friend. And I may have told you this anecdote the other day, where I had a boss, my good boss that I had for a year, got fired, had a new supervisor. And I was an executive at this company, and I was so concerned. I just said, maybe I'll take him to lunch. We'll go to lunch. You know, everybody's good at lunch. Let's get away from the office. and I'll show him I'm a good guy, team player. Yeah. And I was so afraid even to ask him to lunch. And I was 45 years old and I was a vice president. And here I am and I'm rehearsing what I'm going to say. I mean, it's just like you say about becoming small, how humiliating that I've been in television 20 years and yet I'm scared to death of what he's. And so I walk up, I finally have the audacity to ask him to lunch. And he goes, Regal, go to F back to your office. We don't need to break bread. Just do your job. Now, again, he didn't throw a stapler at my head. I wasn't bleeding. I wasn't sexually harassed. There's a big difference. There's laws against that, but there's no laws against belittling and demeaning people in the workplace. So that's a bit of kind of the kind of experience that I had in television. And so I'm wondering, you know, the bullies spent a lot of time figuring out how to bully. I had to do a job. I had to do my work. And I didn't know how to navigate that. So I'm just wondering, as somebody who was a real executive at a matrixed environment, how you would navigate that if you think you could.
Well, I think you've laid out a few different things there. One is that's a terrible leader who responds that way to somebody who is reaching out. And we do know that connected leaders are the most effective leaders. And so what this example shows us is somebody who is not interested in being connected to an employee who's coming forward to break bread. So well, that in itself is you know, there's that. I think there's also something that you describe here. There's so much shame to being the target of workplace bullying. And for those who haven't experienced it, they kind of don't even understand it. Well, why would you feel shame? Because you do. Because somehow it's you that's doing something or not doing something that is causing this bully to come at you. And so you have this shame. And what tends to happen is we don't then talk about it. We can't figure out how to use our words. And for me, back with, you know, when this was going on, I had no idea how to use language to describe what was happening. My hope with the book is to lay out what is happening so that you recognize it, recognize what workplace bullying is, understand it, understand why it may be happening. And here's the big headline of that. It's not your fault. You as the target, it's not your fault. So you recognize it, you understand it, identify potential moves you can make as you have different kinds of bullying coming at you. Yeah. You can ignore it. You can resist it. You can comply. You can enlist your allies. Your fifth and final is you can walk away. So yeah. You recognized it. You've understood it. You identify it. And then you navigate it. That spells ruin. The goal is we don't want workplace bullying to ruin you. Yeah. My advice would be as you are experiencing this in the workplace, this thing that affects one in two workers in America, and yet is known as the undiscussable, discuss it. So yeah. Start discussing it, document it, find somebody to talk to about it. And, you know, it could be you're going to wait it out. You're going to ask to be reassigned. There's different ways that you can try to navigate through it. If it starts to interfere, though, with your actual health and you are having suicide ideation, make sure you're getting the help you need. Make sure you are taking a leave. That would be my hope.
Well, and again, going back to the basketball stuff and the sports stuff, I felt so much shame because I'm not a shy person. I was an athlete. I was never bullied as a young person. And my idea was, hey, dude, this is television in New York City. Man up. And I don't mean that, you know, in a gender specific way. In your case, woman up. You're a tough executive, you know. And so I was trying and it wasn't working. And in fact, just as an aside, and I think I mentioned this to you the other day, I was Bobby Knight, who's a very famous, very bully probably the most famous bully of the 1970s and 80s. I was his executive producer. So it seems like bullies find me. But there was so much shame in not being able to. And part of my job, I was a leader. I had a staff. And so I felt my job was also to absorb the kind of animosity from whomever was providing it and shield it from my staff. And so I felt like I couldn't really talk to anybody about it because it made me look weak. I didn't want anybody to know. I didn't want to throw it on my staff. So that's a tough thing. But I know you work with individuals and organizations. So you've been talking a little bit about the individual level, Megan, which is to me most important. I'm most interested in helping people like us who went through with what we did and we can help targets. But Mate, you're also doing some great work on an organizational level, which may diminish the behavior. So tell me a little bit about how it can be addressed in that fashion when most organizations, at least in the United States, don't even have bylaws, like when you're hired, forcing the employee when they sign their contract to promise a certain level of conduct. So what can be done there?
Yeah, I think the book is really about what is happening and tools, and it lays out, some of these response options. But as I, went through the book launch a year ago, I was thinking about the fact that this trajectory of bullying within the workplace is just going up. You know, it's the numbers are so staggering.
Remote work, I couldn't help myself. Remote work didn't stop it. The fact that we're talking on a computer as opposed to face-to-face, literally face-to-face, that didn't seem to diminish what I call, what I feel, and what Gary Namy, who I follow as well, calls an epidemic. You're still seeing this thing as an epidemic in the workplace.
Absolutely. And, virtual work, even hybrid, we lose connection. We aren't face to face. So it's actually even easier to diminish somebody. The other thing to keep in mind that you prompted is just bullying has a cumulative effect. So when you've been bullied and then you're bullied again and again and again, it just tears you down, and you are no longer the leader that you once were. You may have aspirations to protect your team and all of this, but you're not even operating. Your nervous system is in free fall. You don't know that because what you're trying to do is just get through your day and stay away from the bully, basically. But so I was thinking about, gosh, what is going to reveal itself out of this book? And what revealed itself is I got an invitation to put together a leadership development program for Oregon State University's leadership certification through their School of Business.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a gift because it made this connection for me that, well, if we can develop better leaders, if we can have those conversations and really practice leadership, then we should have less bullying in the workplace. So my business partner and I, his name is Alex Molden, we developed a leadership curriculum called Lead Always, took a page from Pete Carroll's Compete Always. Mm-hmm. Lead Always is about how you show up every day as a leader. It is sport and business coming together. It is chock full of connection exercises to connect to yourself, to your team, and to your business. And then what really sets us apart in my mind is that we practice leadership. And we do that through an NFL lens, because Alex comes from the NFL. So we teach it, we walk through it, and then it's game time. Because as we know, as leaders, every day is game day. So our hope is we help to just make better leaders so that we do start to see this trajectory slowing down.
Yeah. Well, it's wonderful on so many levels what you're doing, and I love the approach to it. You just said something that I used to say to my team every day, because for many years I did live television. And so that by its definition, and I loved it because it was like playing sports. And I used every day is a game day, because we had to put on a show every day. Sometimes multiple shows. And so I totally get that. I don't quite understand why leaders don't understand that if they're good to their teams, and I've learned, I think my management style, I've learned from the best of coaches, teachers, and bosses, and I've learned how not to conduct myself from the worst of the behaviors that I experienced. And so it seems like you're taking it, and I think so many business schools should follow your model, because that's where the future leaders are coming from. So I want to congratulate you for all the work you're doing, and also speaking to me, not just today, but speaking to me in a way that really resonates with me. And I'm sure everybody watching this, especially if they have learned a little something from playing sports. So with that in mind, I wanted to ask you that I understand you have an offering for the people that are watching and listening to this today.
Sure. I would love to provide. It seems like what the interaction I get the most, and you can find me on LinkedIn, Megan Carl. My website is megancarl.com. I have a newsletter that comes out once a month called Corporate Survival Guide, CSG. And so I just write a newsletter once a month. So it's easy to connect with me. My Instagram is Megan M. Carl. And so what I've found is when people are reaching out, really what they want is time. They want time to talk about the things that we just talked about. How can I do this? I'm in this. I'm either experiencing it directly or I'm witnessing. I don't know what to do. Is that bullying? So I would love to offer up a 30-minute free session consult to somebody who calls in or connects with you, and we can make that happen.
Great. Well, they'll be all the better for it, because that's what we're doing here. Megan, my sincerest thanks, and I'll phrase this in a way that I think you'll appreciate. Final word from me, bully victims, you are not alone. We're putting on a full court press here against workplace bullying. You're here, and we're here for you. And Megan, thank you, and thanks everybody for watching.
Thank you.